8:17 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, not a whole lot going on at this week's Summit County Council agenda, but in the studio with some reflection on the Park City Visioning meeting, I have Summit County Council member Roger Armstrong. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Before we start, I have to tell the listeners out there, I'm sitting in a war zone at the studio. There are hammers, there are drills, and Leslie is bulletproof. She is just focused. I've never seen a radio station going through what you guys are going through live. So
keep the headphones on and just tune it out.
Right? Amen. That's right.
Before we get into Tuesday's visioning session, we haven't talked to you since you decided to run for one more term. Tell us about why that you made that decision, because you were kind of on the fence at some point.
I was. This is a lot of work, and it takes a lot of not just time dedication, but a lot of brain dedication to go through the process, to stay engaged with the public, to respond to inquiries from the public, to actually wrestle with the issues that are before us. It's really a lot of work. And so I really wanted to think about it and make sure that I was sticking around for the right reasons. And then I think ultimately what pushed me into running again was with Kim Carson leaving. I think consistency on this council is important. We've got still some big issues coming up. We've got more expansion at the canyons happening. We've got what's happening at Kimball Junction. The transportation issues are still number one. I guess we'll talk about that with the Park City's visioning process, and I think that issue floats up to the top. And I think that we're going to have to make some big changes to address the transportation issues. And I like to think that I can bring some leadership and some experience and just some history to that process. And I think that that kind of consistency is important. So that's why I decided to try one more time.
Okay. One item from the agenda I did want to bring up regarding Hoytsville Road, the council voted for what's called the middle option. That's basically widening the shoulders of this road. Do you think that the Hoytsville Road should be multimodal? I mean, or do we have the rail trail for that?
Well, the rail trail is actually fairly separated from Hoytsville Road, and I don't think it provides the same kind of function as people making their way up and down. I think as we see more and more changes on both sides of the county, multimodal becomes more and more important. Hoytsville Road is a small road to begin with. It's narrow. I think the residents in that area like that. I don't think they're looking for a freeway to go through the middle of their community. They want to keep things small. And I think we want to respect that, but I think at the same time, we're always concerned about health, safety, and welfare. There were some questions, I think, in the surveys that were conducted and some of the comments that came in that somehow this is connected with the Cedar Crest Village Overlay Project out there, and it's not. We talked to Derek Radke about that last night, our Public Works Director, about the reasoning for this. And I can tell you, going back to not long after I got on the council, and we were still dealing with the effects of the recession and revenues and whether we had enough money at any given time to keep our roads maintained. And I think, as you heard us discuss at that time, maintenance is critical, because if we fall behind in maintenance, it leads to the next step, which is more extensive, and then the next step, which is ultimate replacement of a road. So this is all part of the maintenance process out there that Derek has planned. And as long as we're going to be doing that maintenance, can we upgrade what's there? And I think pedestrian paths are important. Whether or not the 8-foot separated path is important, the community told us it's not. So I don't think we do that. But I think, 1.5 feet on each side of that road right now is probably not sufficient for people that want to walk out there. There are a lot of families, and I think opening up those opportunities is useful. A lot of equestrians out there as well.
All right. You did attend Tuesday's Park City Visioning meeting at the Santee. You thought the crowd was on the small side. I think others think they were glad to get the 150 people.
Yeah, if there was 150 people there, I'd be a little bit surprised. I thought, I just did a very rough head count and thought more in the range of 70 or 75 maybe. But the amount, I actually thought the room would be packed. It's the last meeting. They're really looking for guidance from the community about some very important issues, and I expected to walk in and have to fight for a seat, and I was surprised at the lack of engagement. And I think that that's something we as a community need to look at. I think providing feedback to both the county council, county staff, city council, city staff is really important on big issues, because You know, people make their way through this community in a variety of ways. They come from a variety of perspectives, and all of those voices are important to us. So I would have preferred to have seen more people there.
And when we hear the mayor of Park City saying local government is governed by those who show up, I mean, is that a policy to live by? I mean, again, we know a lot of people in this town, because it's not cheap to live here, don't work that, you know, 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. You know, I think Andy is right in to the degree that, you know, you tend to be reactive to the voices around you. But I think we have to be cautious that we're not ignoring the people that aren't speaking up. And those people are the ones that that show up as you've made a decision and they say, why didn't I know about it? Nobody asked me. I didn't have a chance to comment. And, you know, I think I can tell you on the county side, we do everything that we can to reach out through social media and Nextdoor and the newspaper and the radio station to provide people with information about what we are doing and looking to get that feedback. And for me, it's, I can tell you as an elected official, it's helpful to hear back from people because they're the ones on the ground that directly experience issues that we might not in a particular neighborhood. So it is important. And I think we have to be careful, especially when we're talking about things that require bold change, that we feel we have a comprehensive input from people around the community.
Yeah. And you had said yesterday that several ideas from the city were bold. Which ones in particular?
I'm not sure I said that they were bold. I think, you know, the city, they've got a zero waste proposal that's before them. I don't know what they're going to do in their meeting today, their planning meeting. But, you know, the concept of zero waste was put out. Sustainable tourism. I think we're all concerned about the impacts of that vast number of people that come in and out of this community on a regular basis. It's something that impacts us at the county on the recycling side. You know, I've said many times, we have people coming here from a variety of cities around the country, and every city seems to have its own set of rules for recycling in terms of what can and can't be recycled, what they will accept. And we have a 37% or so contamination rate in our recycling that causes those loads to go to a landfill someplace rather than to be recycled. And it's a bit frustrating. So that notion of sustainable tourism, I think, is smart to consider and get our arms around. Transportation wasn't a surprise. I think, you know, without hiring an outside consultant, if you, you know, just intuitively said, what do we think one of our biggest problems is, transportation would come up. Affordability, I think, was probably number two on the list of things that people placed in terms of priority, affordability and equity. And again, I think that that's something we've talked about around the community a lot. There are pockets of this community that might disagree. There are probably discussions that we need to have about what that affordability means, because I think on the one hand, we know that for workforce, our middle-class residents, and for our seniors, it might all be a little bit different in terms of what that issue is and how to satisfy that issue. So I think, you know, a deeper dive is warranted there. And I think the hard part about surveys generally, we had this discussion last night, it's been too long since Summit County did an Eastern Summit County survey, and we used to do them about every 2 years, and we haven't done one in probably 4 or 5 years. It's how you ask the questions, and it's, I think you've got to use real care in how you do it, because I think in any one of the questions that we were asked the other night at the visioning session, you could really get down in the weeds and tease out more and say, well, what if we did it this way? Would you pay for that? And if it meant you had to do this, would you agree to that? And what if, and then thinking about the impacts, a gross question about should we do this in an aggressive way is an interesting starting point, but then the real work begins as you start teasing that out.
There was a lot of talk about regional issues, and many people think that Park City should take the lead on these issues. I'm curious. I mean, shouldn't the counties be leading on these, or is it because that Park City is what has created the problems, the traffic, the transportation issues, the high cost housing?
Complicated question. Do I think the county should lead on certain things? Absolutely. Should we lead on transportation? Yes. And Park City has been leading. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, said, it's time for something about the county and transit. I think in the basin that somehow, maybe it was in the newspaper yesterday, that there's been tension between the city and the county because the city believes that the county has not been doing things properly with regard to transportation. The city controls transit right now. They have since 1995, I think, when we entered into the first agreement with the city to operate transit for us. And we've been working hard over the last year plus to, I think, address some of the tensions that we do have in that regard. The city has been largely responsive, particularly over the last year, to those concerns. And I think we're now getting to the point where we're going to start figuring out how best to manage those impacts. Park City has to have a seat at the table. Park City, I think more than, I actually woke up thinking about this morning. Park City, I think, fairly is the center point for most of the transportation impacts that we have, except some of the outgoing workforce that we have. I mean, we've got 15,000 people going out, an equal number, maybe a little bit more coming in. The tourism stuff, the big events tend to happen in that Park City area. So the impacts that we see on 224 are to a large extent, but not entirely, due to occurrences in Park City. So they absolutely have to be a part of the solution and how we work things out. We're going to see more of that happening as Mayflower gets built out. So the similar impacts that we see from Park City, we're going to start experiencing from people bypassing Park City to head for Mayflower because in the early stages it may be more convenient, it may be whatever, because 40 theoretically may be a faster way to get someplace than a clogged 224. So for our own economic survival, we've got to figure out how to deal with these issues. And I don't want to, again, this is not intended to put more of a burden on Park City than they should bear, but I do think regionalization is the key, and I do think in that case, the county taking the lead on transportation is probably important. Affordability, I don't know that, leading and following is maybe not the most important thing, but sharing ideas and coming up with better ways to do things, I think, is the right way to do it there.
Real quick, what's the latest with the Children's Justice Center? You've met your fundraising goals there. When do things open for business?
It's naked on the inside. I think they started the process. I think our county attorney, Margaret Olson, was a bit surprised when she visited and saw that everything is essentially down to the studs. I think we had one assumption about what it was going to take to make that work. And I think when the construction crews got in there and started making the changes they thought they needed to make, it became obvious to them that they really needed to kind of clear things out to get it done, that it would be cheaper, faster, and more efficient to take it down rather than to do it in a piecemeal fashion. And it seems to be on track, and I'm told that it's on budget, and they expect to have things done sometime middle of spring, I hope. And maybe it's May, which I guess is something close to middle of spring. So, yeah, we're excited about getting into that facility.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Roger. Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's 8:30. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, as we've reported, Park City Senior Center members formed the Save Our Senior Center Committee after unanimously voting to remain in the building there at 1361 Woodside Avenue. In the studio with an update, I have a couple of the committee members, Jim Tedford, along with Mary Ann Cohn. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the seniors' meeting place is set to move for the construction of Park City Municipal's Woodside Phase 2 affordable housing development as soon as this spring. But after your vote, you have decided that you're not moving, Jim?
We have decided that we would like to stay where we are until a new permanent facility is provided.
So does that mean that you chain yourself to the backhoe?
I hope not. But we expressed our position to the city about a month ago that we wanted to stay where we were until a new permanent facility was available. and we have yet to hear back from them. So that's kind of where it stands today.
Okay. It's my understanding that the seniors recently paid the city $43. That was a buck a year for the last 43 years that you have been there. Those are the terms of the lease. And you've also decided to reinstate your 501c3 status. So just the fact that you haven't paid rent, doesn't that invalidate the lease? I mean, we certainly all remember what happened with Powder Core and Park City Mountain.
Well, we've actually heard from some of the seniors that have been around from a long time that amount of money was paid right up front, which is typically done for the whole term of the lease. I can't verify that, but that's what we've heard.
Okay, and, so that $99 was paid up
right,
front.
Mm. Possibly. So, and we have paid up the rest of the money, and it is currently a Utah nonprofit. So we feel that it's a valid lease.
So what's the response been? I mean, have you heard from any city officials?
We had an informal meeting with a couple of city council people, and they expressed their opinion that it wasn't valid because we're no longer a Utah nonprofit corporation, which we are currently. It had lapsed for a few years, but Park City Senior Citizens, Inc. is currently a Utah nonprofit.
Okay, but again, the fact that it had lapsed, that doesn't invalidate the lease?
According to our legal attorney, our legal representative, no, that does not.
So is this mean, I mean, are we headed to court?
We hope not. Hopefully something can be worked out here. But, yeah, I mean, it really comes down to the whole intent. You know, back in 1978, the seniors met with the city. They had this agreement. They made this agreement. The city agreed to have the seniors use this property for 99 years. And it's just the intent and the moral issue here, really, that's so important to us. We just feel that it's really unfair to tell the seniors they have to leave before the lease is up and without an adequate facility to move to.
So what's going to resolve the situation here? I mean, if the city wants to move the center, and you say we're not moving, I mean, where does it go from here?
That's what we're trying to work out. You know, this group, this place has been used continuously since 1978 when it was finished. The lease was 1976. And these are people who are volunteers. The president gets paid a pittance a month to take care of things. So most of the history is verbal. And there are people who step up to help. So I'm not surprised we don't have a history. But the dollar a year is really a token. It used to, you know, in the old days, like a couple centuries ago, it was a peppercorn because pepper was a commodity that was valuable. So it really is just a token, that dollar a year. And then at the state, it was $10 a year. And so as things go from one person to the next, one president to the next, let's say one of them dies and the next one says, I'll be president for a while. There isn't a great chain of command that goes on. So what we hear is verbal. And they're an amazing group of people. There are about 150 people on the record now as members. And anyway, I just think it's important that they stay. And not all the housing is on top of that building site. You know, one of the councilmen said, well, we're not giving up 55 units for seniors. And I went, well, they're not all on top of that site. And there can be some redesigns.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, we've heard that, you know, your focus is to keep the senior center where it is until there is a viable permanent alternative. But realistically, I mean, is there something like that exists that you would be happy with so that we don't have to build a brand new building? Because that's not going to happen anytime soon.
No, there was a building that was going to be at the city park. And it's where that old rec building is that is not getting full use. And it was a bigger building. It was very nice. And I think the seniors liked that idea. There was a community space. There was senior space. The playground is redesigned, but is there. And then I think it was decided it was too expensive. The price came in at $8 million. That's what Nan Worrell said. And it just seemed like a lot of money. So that place that would have been wonderful went away. And then inadequate spaces were put in its place. The Christian Center is a nice building. It's a nice room. They couldn't leave a deck of cards behind. And the city was going to do a transit shuttle because there's no parking. So that's where things started not working. and that's what we're trying to get to. And we're working with the city on this. You know, we've met with the mayor and the liaisons to seniors. So we're working on this. We're just hopeful for a resolution soon.
Yeah. Is there any room in the Sheldon Richens building that Children's Justice Center is moving out?
I've explored that with a county councilman. There isn't. No.
But like I say, if the Children's Justice Center is moving out, you couldn't take that space?
It isn't big enough, apparently. I haven't actually been in there to double check. I mean, I started at first, before we knew about the lease, I started looking for places. I worked with Pat Putt, and I even went to Jupiter Bowl. The rent was a little high there, I thought, being a commercial space. So I don't know what. The city is going to come back with some alternatives that they think we might like, but right now we're happy to be in that building.
Yeah, but I guess in terms of you just staying put, saying we have a valid lease, that's going to take, it's either going to take a court case or a negotiation. So are we even close to either?
We don't know.
We're
still waiting to find out the situation from the city.
Definitely prefer a negotiation. There's no question. And I'm sure the city does too.
Yeah. And why won't temporary work for you?
Well, it depends on what's temporary, too. I mean, it was really disappointing, number one, that the seniors didn't really have a say. They were told that they had to leave. And number two, that a totally inadequate facility is provided. The Christian Center has this big room that had to be set up every day, taken down every day, nothing permanent in there. And there's absolutely no parking. And it really is disappointing that the city thought that was okay. So I guess it's just time to wait and see what happens.
Yeah. What about Miners Hospital?
Not sure about that. There was a plan to put an elevator on the back. It does have some issues as far as ADA. And I think that it was rejected because of that.
Okay. So, I mean, we're just kind of between a rock and a hard spot at this point, huh?
Yeah, right. And the city was going to get back to us about 3 weeks ago. They didn't. So this is why we've kind of gone to the media and let people know, because we have a group of about 200 people behind us going, well, what's going on? You know, we're like, okay, we're going to let people know what's happening.
Okay. And I guess in the meantime, if somebody's got something out there that they'd like to lease to the senior center, you'd be happy to talk to them too.
I think they should talk to the city, probably Jonathan Weidenheimer.
Okay. All right. Anything else you guys want to say on the issue then?
No, thank you.
Not on that issue, but there is a dead elk out on 224 this morning, so keep up your warnings.
Okay.
We really appreciate you saying that.
All right. Yeah. Jim Tedford, Marianne Cohn, thanks for your time this morning. You are listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:41. Well, a market and fine art showcase featuring local Utah artists will be held this weekend. In the studio with details, I have the director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council, Jocelyn Scudder. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So when and where is this happening?
So the Winter Art Showcase is going to take place this weekend, Friday and Saturday, February 15th and 16th, at the Park City Community Church. And it's going to be from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And for those of you who might not know where the church is, it's right off of 224 behind the Park City Nursery. So there's going to be plenty of parking, and this is going to be a free event, open to the public, and family friendly, and it's a completely new event for us. We actually we used to do an art market event in November, December time frame in support of the Park City Professional Artists Association. So this is one of our partnership programs where we really look to elevate another arts organization here in town. And so we serve as kind of a producing entity to support PCPAA and support local artists and to give them platform to sell work and cultivate new collectors. And so we used to do art elevated at the Swanner every, during the holidays, but there's a lot of art markets at that time, and you know, we never want to create redundancies, so we kind of reimagined this and decided to experiment with President's Weekend. There's going to be a ton of people in town, lots of visitors, people with family and friends in town. So this is a brand new show, and we hope that locals, if they have friends in town, or if you're just interested in checking out the local art scene, getting some local flavor, we encourage you to come out and support your local artists. We'll have up to 30 artist booths at the Park City Community Church. Everything will be for sale. We'll have cookies and lemonade, and it's just going to be a really fun event and something different on a President's Day weekend. I know that most people will be skiing and enjoying, but it'll be a great kind of stop on the way in and way out to just experience art and be inspired.
Okay. You mentioned Friday, Saturday, but that's the 14th, 15th.
Sorry. Thank you for catching that. It's Saturday and Sunday.
The 15th, 16th.
15th okay. and 16th. Thank okay. you, Leslie.
Okay. And it's free to get in.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. free. It's free. That's always a priority when the Arts Council does programming. We want to make sure it's accessible for the public. And so it's just an opportunity for our artists to get their work in front of people and, you know, for our community and visitors to see the amazing creative talent that exists here in Park City and Summit County. It is a majority local artists. We do have some, I think, two or three artists that are outside of Summit County. But, you know, nonetheless, it's great local representation, and we're really pleased. This is a juried show, so the caliber of art is going to be wonderful. And it's not just going to be paintings. We'll have fiber arts. So we'll have beautiful scarves. We'll have some jewelry. And then we'll have prints, books, paintings. So there's really something for everyone, and we just encourage people to come out and check it out.
Okay. Let's see, what else is happening with the Arts Council? How was that month-long closure? Did it give artists a break while you had to get out of your place on Main Street?
Of the Main Street spaces. You know, when we agreed to enter those spaces, we knew that it was always the plan that we would move out for Sundance. And we're actually, you know, we're just grateful for the opportunity. Sales in December, obviously, I mean, anyone can project that, you know, it's busy. We did extremely well in December. And then we were actually able to stay open through the first week of January. Sales were great. And then we vacated for 3 weeks and we're back in. So it's been, you know, those Main Street spaces, the pop-up spaces that Leslie's talking about is Brand PC and Create PC. Those are at 692 Main Street and 660 Main Street. They're a complete experiment for us, but we're kind of just riding it out. It's an incredible opportunity to offer platforms for both our fine artists at Create PC and local creative entrepreneurs who have creative product to sell. You know, I mean, it's just to be able to give them platform on Main Street, especially during the ski season, it's a great opportunity. So we're rolling with it, and it's been a huge success so far.
Yeah. How much work was it, though, to move out and move back in?
Well, I mean, I lots of work. Definitely. You know, moving trucks and inventory. So, you know, but that was, we forecasted that, and it was always something expected. So we're not afraid of hard work, that's for sure.
Yeah. And then in terms of staffing it, I mean, do you have artists that volunteer to take shifts? Is that how you do it? Or do you
we actually pay artists. Mm-hmm. So both stores, obviously, if you know the Arts Council, we are a small organization with a small staff. But when we reached out to different artists and makers who wanted to participate, what ended up happening, you know, everyone was so excited about the opportunity. They both kind of formed into organic co-ops, essentially. So the artists that were participating in Create PC, which is the artist maker space and gallery, a lot of the artists were saying, you know, Jocelyn, Leslie, how can I help? And they end up just, we pay them $15 an hour and they're able to be in there and work the gallery to help us be open 7 days a week, 8 hours a day. And so, I mean, it works out perfectly because then we're able to provide an avenue for them to represent their own work. They're the best advocates for the space because they can speak to the mission of the programs. And so it's been really great. Every single person that works with us in those stores is either a maker in Brand PC or an artist in Create PC.
Okay. All right, so the Art Market and Fine Art Showcase this Saturday and Sunday at Park City Community Church. The hours there are what?
10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And yes, thanks for catching that. Saturday and Sunday this weekend, free and open to the public. Please bring your family and friends and support our local creatives.
Okay. Anything else, Jocelyn?
Just if you have questions or you need to find out more information, please visit our website, pcscarts.org.
Okay. Jocelyn, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:48. Well, the Youth Sports Alliance Spring Scholarship Cycle is open in the studio with details on that, as well as this spring's after-school programs. I have Youth Sports Alliance Director Emily Fisher along with Youth Programs Director Heather Sims. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Emily, let's start with you and talk a little bit about the scholarships. Applications are open?
Applications are open. We have an application period from February 1st through February 28th. This is for our Stein Erickson Opportunity Endowment for the spring scholarships. We've changed them a little bit. So in the fall, athletes apply for their full year of what they expect their cost is going to be. And then in the spring is really for athletes who may have qualified for an additional competition or an invitation camp that they weren't expecting. So a Junior Worlds trip, a Junior Nationals trip, maybe a regional trip, something that they have qualified that, you know, their season went better than expected.
Okay. How much money do you have in to give out?
Well, so I think for the full year, we're looking at giving out $150,000. We gave out about $120,000 in the fall, so about another $30,000. And in the last decade, we've given out $665,000 to local athletes. So looking to just continue and grow that number.
Okay. So they got to have some kind of proof of performance in terms of the application. Yeah.
They are all needs-based, mm-hmm. but then for the competition that they've qualified for, they would just have to let us know which competition and where it is. And some of these, you know, junior world, junior national trips can be quite expensive. So looking just to help those athletes get to those competitions.
Okay. Again, it can be all done online?
Yep, our applications are now all online, ysaparkcity.org, and they can be filled out there.
Okay, great. And then, Heather, you've got what, in the midst of or just wrapping up the Get Out and Play and Activate programs?
So they go all year, but the Alpine program is just wrapped up last Friday. We had last week was probably our busiest week over since I've been part of the program. We had 800 kids just under out and about between the all three resorts, Canyons, Park City, Deer Valley. We've added Woodward into the mix, UOP, we had ice skating, cross country. And then for those kids that really, that's not their thing, we had some programs inside the school, including T9 and Chef and some art programs with Kimball Arts and Moves Conditioning with CrossFit. So yeah, it was very busy, and we had some challenges last Friday with the wind holds over at Canyons. And, you know, thanks to Park City Mountain and all the amazing instructors, we ended up with all just under 500 kids over at Park City Mountain. So it was, you know, we have some challenges, but it made it work. And those kids that were normally at Canyons, they got to experience another resort. So it was great.
All right. And when do the spring programs get back?
So we already have some programs ready to go for spring. We have another Woodward program. We have Bow Collective is doing some programs with us and art programs. And then the Get Out and Play, the next program is ice skating. And then we'll start mountain bike season, already thinking about that. So, yeah.
Okay. And then again, that would be online in terms of registration and stuff?
Yeah. So depending on the age, so first through fifth is Get Out and Play, and then sixth through eighth is Activate. And you can just go to our ysaparkcity.org and choose those programs, as well as if they, you know, want the scholarships, they can go there too.
All right. So with 800 kids, I mean, are there more that want to participate, or can
yes.
you physically just not take them?
Yes, there is more that want to participate. We did a pilot program this year, thanks to a grant from Epic Promise with South Summit. And we were only able to have 24 kids in that program. And they actually did it on Monday night under the lights when the teams were training. They were also training some instructors. And so our kids were able to participate there. And I probably could have sold that program several times over. And hopefully next year we'll be able to expand that. But yes, definitely the Alpine program is one of our most popular, and you know, over 500 kids take part in that program.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. You just wanted to mention that you've got a program running with Atticus?
Yeah, so Atticus Coffee and Tea House is a great local tea house, coffee house that every single month they pick a different nonprofit and they give a percentage of every single sale back to that nonprofit. And February is Youth Sports Alliance Month. So if you head on in there, if you're looking to have a coffee meeting or just have a little pick-me-up, please head on into Atticus, not just this month, but every month, because they really are a great community partner.
Okay. And have you guys figured out where you're going? Because I think you've got everybody out there got letters saying that you've got to be vacated soon.
Well, we are still working. Again, Park City Municipal has been a great partner, and we're still working with them to see how long and what the future is there at the Arts and Culture District. So we will see how long we can stay, and then look for office space after that.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I think just in terms of community partners, thanks again to KPCW. Last time we were on the radio, we had, you know, three great things come out of that interview. We had somebody approach us about a potential grant. We had somebody buy some lift tickets from us. We had somebody else just really interested in the programs that hadn't heard about us before. So thanks to KPCW for all you do for the community as well.
Got it. See you later. See you next month then.
Thank you.
Thank you.